upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Sometimes you take many steps towards your goal, and maybe other days you just take one step, and that's okay.
And that is okay. Initially, I didn't plan to write a series of books. I planned to write a book, and then I realized, oh my gosh, I need to write a series of books. So you can start with one plan, one milestone, and then that might lead to the next milestone that leads to the next milestone. But the important thing is it ties back to your SWOT analysis, to your vision. Where do you want to go? And the biggest thing, why? Why do you want to do that? I shared the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is I want to pay it forward. I want to create these pathways. I want to share this information with others so they can find their way, whether it's in the space industry or entrepreneurship or another industry, that they're able to find their pathway. And the best way to do that is write it down and get out there and talk about it.
Shelly, I'm really excited to have you on the Core Impact Podcast. I'd like to start with you directly about talking about your books. You wrote two books, and it's both start with what space got to do with it. One is about personal, let's say, growth, and the other is more about turning vision into action, right? So would you like to tell us what is your intention behind writing these two books?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to join you today. I'm so excited to talk about the books and what's really behind the books. And as you said, the What Space Got to Do With It series has to do with my 35-year career in the space and aerospace emerging technology industry. And a lot of times I would meet people and they wouldn't understand, you know, what does space have to do with it? What does space have to do with our daily lives? What does space have to do with leadership, professional growth, personal development? And I would go out and I would do talks or I'd mentor people. And many times they'd say, do you have this written down? So that was part of it, was starting to write down that advice, because you can only mentor so many people. So this is a way that in the books, it talks about, like you said, the first book is about personal growth. It's 10 life lessons. And each lesson shares a little bit about my journey. But then I've included in each chapter three global thought leaders and how they tie in and validate that that life lesson will work no matter whether you're in the space industry or another industry. And then I included a section in each chapter that says turning insights into action. So it's what each individual can then do from there. So maybe they don't have a mentor or an organization that can help them find their next step. So the book actually includes those next steps, whether it's free or low cost classes, books to read, webinars to watch. It provides the next steps that they can take on their own.
I noticed that you focus on visionary leadership. So how can you define a visionary leader?
Well, I think what we have to do is I really look at leadership under three main areas, and that's going to be in my upcoming book called Out of This World Leadership, that's coming out in 2026. And it really focuses on three main things, and that's inspirational, authentic, and gratitude. That's what I see leaders having today, as well as into the future. And under that visionary leadership or inspirational leadership is where you find that vision. You know, when leaders can cast a broad vision and say, this is where we're going. This is where I want you to be. I want you to get on board with me. And you can see that whether it's entrepreneurs who are very inspirational, academia leaders who say, this is where we're going. This is where I'm taking the organization. And I highlight Dr. John Wensven, who is the president of International Space University, as one of those inspirational leaders. He's in book two. He has a new vision for International Space University and where he wants to take it. We also can see this with companies. You know, you can see companies out there. You know, we could look at SpaceX and Elon Musk, who said, I can do this. I can build a rocket. I can do this less expensively than the government can. And he had a vision and he took people with him. And you can also see government leaders. You can look at the United Arab Emirates and their government and king's vision to have a Mars colony in less than the next 100 years. And so that was a big, bold vision, and they started building around that. So that visionary leadership falls under being inspirational.
Shelly, now when you're talking about authenticity, I'm curious to hear from you. What is the one mistake you consider it one of the biggest mistakes that you had in your career that helped you to be the leader you are right now?
So one of the biggest mistakes I've made in my career is when I was much younger in my career, I thought I knew everything. I thought I knew it all. I didn't need to ask other people. I can just do it. And the other thing I thought was I could do it myself. So two mistakes. So what I've now learned as I've gotten wiser is I don't know it all. As a matter of fact, every day I'm learning how much I don't know. But if I listen to other people, I can learn from them, and then I can become a better leader. So I call it listen, learn, and lead. The other thing is, you know, I grew up as an only child, so we'll share that with your audience. So I always did things alone. I mean, I knew other kids, I played with other kids, but it was different. When you're an only child, you're very independent. So that was something I learned through my military career in the U.S. Air Force. It's not about doing it alone. It's about being part of a team, because together we can accomplish a lot more. So there's an African proverb: if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. So those are two mistakes or lessons I've learned over my career.
While you are listening to the Core Impact Podcast, please take a moment to pause and share with me. How do you feel? Are you enjoying the conversation, feeling inspired, or something else? I would love to know your feelings in the comments. There is something also I'm curious to know from you. How would you summarize them in a simple way, let's say, which are what you call the four foundational pillars? So first one is leadership. The second is awareness. Third is access. And the fourth one is action. Would you like to talk more about these four?
Absolutely. So in the second book, so the first book was the 10 Life Lessons for Personal Growth. And that's really great for young professionals, 35 and younger, all the way into high school or junior high. Great lessons learned for professional development, creating a foundation. Now, the second book can be independent, and it's for even up to mid-career as well as younger folks. And those four foundational pillars: leadership, awareness, access, and action. So leadership is about self-leadership. You know, before you can lead others, you really need to lead yourself. You need to understand yourself. They even talk about this with emotional intelligence, you know, self-awareness. So lead yourself means you should do a SWOT analysis for yourself. What are your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats? So what are your strengths? What are you really good at? What could you improve on? What are the opportunities that could be out there based on what you're excited about, passionate about? What are the threats? And you can find some great, in the book, I have some SWOT tools that are free, complimentary. I also do a masterclass, and I share some of those SWOT tools through the masterclass. That next step is you have to create awareness. So once you know yourself and you know what you want to do, now you can start looking for those opportunities. Because until you know your self-leadership, it doesn't matter what you're looking for, because all things will be available. But now once you've focused and you have awareness about yourself, now you start to look at, okay, I need to improve some areas, right? Maybe some of your weaknesses are strategic communication. Or listening skills, right? I had the listening skills. So maybe there's some classes you could take, or you could find a mentor. So now you start looking for where might opportunities be. For instance, one opportunity, World Space Week this past year had a mentoring program. So that could have been a good opportunity. Then the next step is access. So once you know that, okay, I know myself, I know what I need to do. Now I need to look at, based on my awareness, what are the things I want to focus on? Because when you get in the internet, it can take you everywhere. So you need to be focused through awareness. Now you find those access points. So I talked about, maybe it's World Space Week could be an access point. Maybe it's Space Generation Advisory Council. So now you actually start looking for organizations and programs that create an access point into what you're passionate about, what you learn through your self-discovery. And then, of course, the last step, which can be sometimes the most important, is you need to take action. So, If you do all this work and then you just have it on a piece of paper like this, it won't do you any good. You have to then take action. So you need to be a lifelong learner. So maybe you need to take training courses. Maybe it's building your network, or maybe it's finding a mentor. So that tells you a little bit about the four different pillars in the book.
Thank you, Shelley. There is something that's coming in my mind now when you're talking about them, which is, what are the biggest misconceptions that you see from people when they read your books or they get to know your work in general?
Well, that's wonderful. I think one of the biggest misperceptions is when people think about space in general, or maybe emerging technology or deep tech, is they automatically think that's not for them. They put up a barrier and they might say, oh, that's for astronauts, that's for rocket scientists. Oh, this book is about space. And in reality, the book is about not about space per se. It's lessons from space, but it really is leadership lessons that can apply to anybody, no matter where you are in the world. Because what I did by interviewing over 200 global thought leaders and including 30 interviews per book is I demonstrate that this book will apply to anybody, whether you're in Africa, South America, the United States, Asia, men, women, in space, not in space. It will provide you clarity and opportunities. So I think that's one of the biggest misperceptions about the space industry. It is open to all. There are career paths across all the sectors, whether it's teacher to technicians, rocket scientists, to researchers. There's an opportunity. And the book is really for anybody, because it's really about leadership and professional development.
When I think about space, I don't think about it also only as something that's very far. It's about astronauts, etc. I think about it beyond the industry, of course, as it's almost everything. And without it, we cannot understand ourselves. We cannot reflect. We cannot create. So what do you think about it, and how do you define space?
I think you're right on target. And what I mean by that is space is part of our everyday lives. We just don't know it. It's so integrated. You know, we all have phones. We love these. There are algorithms in your phone that came from the space industry. You're running apps that are running on the infrastructure of space and cybersecurity. Your banking information is running on space infrastructure. You're also using, one of my favorites is selfies. Your selfies are also, you know, NASA imaging technology. A lot of the cameras in your phones are NASA imaging technology, so your pictures. And even today, we're using a telecommunications tool to talk, and all of telecommunications originated from the Apollo program, because NASA needed to talk to the astronauts and they created the telecommunications, and then companies commercialized it. And that's how we have telecommunications today. So whether it's healthcare, dentistry, advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, robotics, space is already intersected in all those sectors.
I'm curious now to know from you, what is the most exciting project you've worked on this year so far?
Well, there are so many amazing projects I've worked on. You know, I had the opportunity to speak throughout Australia on education and entrepreneurship. But I'm going to say one of the most exciting programs I did was I went to Togo. And initially, I went on behalf of the U.S. Embassy in Lomé through the U.S. State Department. And we did the first Space Forum Africa conference, and we kicked that off in April to start to bring into Togo the opportunities that space investment and entrepreneurship can do to build an ecosystem and economic development and prosperity throughout Togo and the region of Africa, and how space, less about space, satellites and rockets, but more about Earth observation, telecommunications, and how it can benefit citizens. So we had a wonderful kickoff to that Space Forum Africa conference, but then that leveraged into several other things. I continued to partner with leaders in Togo, and we created a Women Tech Lead Creators Entrepreneurship Program through the Mandela Washington Fellowship Program out of the U.S. State Department. And then that has now leveraged into another U.S. State Department program that we're now doing throughout all of Togo, which is called Digital Youth Entrepreneurship Lab. And we're now doing programs over the next 4 months so we can help train 50 entrepreneurs throughout Togo using technology, innovation, entrepreneurship. And through my second book, I actually have created a masterclass in innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship. So I'm teaching that masterclass for each of these cohorts, and there'll be 5 cohorts of 10 entrepreneurs each.
Would you like to talk more about it?
Well, so it's really exciting. And Abube, my partner in Togo through the Academy des Leaders, and again, the U.S. State Department, it's a wonderful opportunity because when you can help entrepreneurs to create products, programs, and services, they then solve problems, because that's what entrepreneurs do. They are problem solvers. They're solving problems for others. Maybe even it was their problem to begin with. That's why they became an entrepreneur. And then they're empowering others to also do that. So part of the program, in addition, you know, I'm doing the masterclass on the second book about entrepreneurship and innovation and leadership, but we're bringing in individuals to talk about kickstarting. There's technology training. You know, you can do so many things to build a business with your phone. And obviously for individuals in Africa, using your phone to create a business is fantastic. So there's technology, they're talking about drones, and it's a 4-day program in 5 regions of Togo. So it's a really amazing program. I'm just a small part of this overall program, and I'm really grateful to be part of it. This is about building a lasting impact. You know, you can go to a conference, like I said, the Space Forum Africa is a wonderful conference, 4 days. I went out and visited schools. But now by partnering with Academy des Leaders and others like the U.S. Embassy in Lomé, we're actually able to create a lasting impact. And now my collaboration with them has been going on for many months since April. And so now we're impacting many people. I just received a note from somebody this morning on LinkedIn. They just accomplished a great award and I congratulated them. And they said, thank you so much, because of the Women Tech Lead Creators program we did in September that helped them accomplish their goals and receive this award. And the Women Tech Lead Creators program was designed to help 20 female entrepreneurs create a technology business. Again, solving problems, helping others, but it also helps their family, it helps their community. And part of each of these programs we do, we require the participants to also pay it forward. So after they get done with the program, they have to go out into their community and now share the skills that they learned in this program. So we're creating that ripple effect and helping grow the ecosystem.
I'm wondering how happy you are when you do such things.
It's wonderful. I this is why, you know, I was in the Air Force for 30 years and I did space procurement, and then I work at the Space Foundation as the chief operating officer. And then 2 years ago, I started my own company to do just this, to be able to write books, to partner with others, to create opportunities for people to better their lives, to create those opportunities. These women and the other entrepreneurs in the other program, they're not just women, it's women and men. They're changing their lives. They're changing their families' lives. They're changing their communities' lives. So it's kind of like you throw a pebble into a pond and you can watch the ripple effect. And hopefully that ripple effect goes long after I've departed or not been, you know, I come in, I teach my program, and then I leave. The other program that I'm going to be kicking off, a little surprise for you and your audience. You probably are aware of International Space University, and they always have a summer program called their Space Studies program. It's a 5-week program. This summer, 2026, it will be in Strasbourg, France at their main campus. And I have been selected to be a team project chair. So one of the things I'll be doing is looking at that second book and creating a team project for the students that will be coming to take part of the Space Studies program in Strasbourg, France. So stay tuned. We're still working through the curriculum development, but I kind of outlined a really fun team project that I think will really be exciting, and all the participants and the students will be able to actually take something back with them that they can continue to grow on. Not even on LinkedIn yet. I haven't even shared it on LinkedIn. You're the first one.
Thank you very much. Shelley, there is one thing that's coming to my mind when I think, like, how much international you think in an international way, let's say, collaborating with everyone around the world, how important it is for leaders and change makers to have this mindset, especially in the future.
Well, I will say, first of all, that global collaboration is really one of those things you learn from the space industry, because space is a very expensive activity, and it's still dangerous. And so you can look at the United States with the Artemis program, and the Artemis program is designed to return humanity to the moon, and this time to stay, and then we go on to Mars. But we're doing it as partners. More than 50 countries have signed the Artemis Accords. So it's multinational. There's also, when you think about space, there's all the country laws, but because space is also a global domain, I'm going to call it, that every country has access to it, it's also under the United Nations Office of Outer Space Affairs. So we have to work together. So there's lots of opportunities in the space industry for diplomats, for international relations, for policymakers, for space lawyers, in addition to those rocket scientists and astronauts. So because I grew up, my professional career was a lot in the space industry. Yes, there's military and civil space, but I really learned a lot about that international space, the collaboration, and how we work together to create the things we want. I mean, most nations want capacity building. You want an educated workforce. You want to create entrepreneurial and business opportunities to solve problems, but also create employment opportunities, create products and services, create economic wealth and prosperity. And most countries want to have global trade in some sort of fashion where they look for external markets and they find reciprocal arrangements. So the space industry was a really great foundation for building that international look. I will also share, having been in the Air Force for many years, I was fortunate to get stationed in Turkey and Germany, and having that opportunity to live internationally, to, you know, live in the communities, to learn languages, to understand cultural differences, and how do we work together? How do we create opportunities? That really was part of the skill set from the beginning of my military career.
Shelley, I had some conversations with people in high positions in different industries, and some of them, they have kind of resistance towards change, towards also the world is changing. So some companies used to have people, let's say, from more or less one country, maybe more males than females. And now with all these changes, they say, When you want to do all of this work, it's harder to be in harmony, and it's not really bringing us forward. It's better for us to just stay as we are, because when we all maybe speak the same language, let's say they have different or same culture or mindset, then there's no need to push and be open to everyone and include everyone and see everyone in the world, what do they need and how can they support us and how can we support them, etc. If someone comes to you and say this, what would you tell them?
Well, I think first of all, listening to their point is very valid, and it depends. So just like you did a SWOT analysis for yourself, all your companies should be doing SWOT analysis. They should be looking at what are the opportunities presenting themselves, what is the change, and how do they want to move forward with that change. Now, some of the changes, they don't have a choice. Artificial intelligence is happening. It's happening in every sector. So those companies probably should have somebody on their board of directors. That's a chief technology officer or a strategist who can really be helping them understand the emerging technology and how does it want to play into their company. And if they're not thinking that, I assure you, their competition is, because they can stay stagnant or stay in one place, but their competition is not. And that is the wonderful thing about competition. It forces you to continue to evolve, to create new products and services, to do things better, to have better processes, to reduce costs, to reduce timelines. So for companies who might be resistant to change, they need to understand their business model. Who is their target customer? Maybe their customer is only in their country. Well, then that might make sense that they don't need to bring in international advisors. Maybe they grow tomatoes and they only need to sell tomatoes in their country. Maybe they don't need to sell tomatoes to the United States or somewhere else. So I can't make a general term, but if they're a company that is selling technology or they want to compete in the global marketplace, and most countries and companies in other countries want to compete and provide their products and services in the United States, in Japan, in China. They do want global opportunities. So they do need to open up the global lens and understand. They don't have to necessarily change their culture, but they do need to understand the culture of their customer. So a lot of companies like to sell in the United States. SES is a company that's located in Europe, but they also have a U.S. subsidiary. So that company, that president, understands the U.S. market. They speak the U.S. market language. They understand the U.S. policies and laws. So that's what I share with you. Maybe the corporate company is located in another country and they need to understand their constituents. But if they want to do business elsewhere, they probably really need to open up another office elsewhere. And I'm seeing that that's the United States, but even Saudi Arabia and the UAE, they're doing a lot of international business and they all want those companies that want to come in and do business to have a company office in their country so that they can meet with local leaders, understand local policies, hire local workers, etc.
Shelly, I like how you started answering the question with you have to understand them first, right? And it's so easy. And I see it a lot now working in the sustainability field and with many people who are enthusiastic and excited about how we can make the world better in their own view, talking about environmental change, climate change, all these issues, and also the social issues that we're having in the world and how can we resolve them. And it's very easy to, I used to be at least, naive, looking at it from one point, right? So this is how it should be. This is how it must be. And everyone else, if they say anything else and they resist in any way or think any different perspective, then that is wrong. And this is the right thing to do. And in this case, you cannot really have sustainable, authentic relationships with others and really collaborate with them. So yeah, this is something, just a reflection that you reminded me of now too. This is also part of changing the mindset.
Sure. I think we all come at things from different perspectives, from our background. That's why I interviewed 200 global thought leaders for the book series and why 30 thought leaders are in each book. Because I might know what I know from my background in the space industry, being an American, but I might not know what the former president of Ecuador, Dr. Rosalia, thinks about something. Or Dr. Tidian Uttara, the president of the African Space Council. So really listening to these other points of views from around the world help you gain a global perspective. The other point is you won't necessarily agree on all points. But the goal is, what are some foundational points you can agree on? Many people can agree on they want schools and opportunities for their children. They want to create a robust economy because they want to elevate everyone's quality of life and standard of living. Now, how you do that and how you get there could be different for each region of the world, but there are some foundational things that most people can come and sit down together, even from different languages, and say, yes, I want my children to have a wonderful future. I want them to have good education. I want them to have opportunities. Yes, I want our country to have a robust economy and good GDP and be able to create products and services that others can buy, that we can employ people and people can have jobs and have a good quality of life. Most people can agree to those basic things. Now, where it gets tricky is how we get to those things. And that may be where we step back and say, well, we agree on these things. Now, how can we work together to help you in your region of the world with your constituents and their ideas? How do we help you unlock that? And that was part of what I'm doing in Togo. I didn't go into Togo and say, I know everything. You all need satellites and rockets and astronauts. No, I went in, I listened, I shared how space technology that exists today could help them. Right now, the satellites are already there. You can use the information for free. The data is already available. This can help your farmers. This can help your military protect the borders. You can protect your fisheries and explain how the space technology can help benefit their lives with what they're doing. And then how can we help create these entrepreneurship programs so we can create economic development? So I went in to listen and to share how these education programs can help you in your country. I don't expect them to be like the United States or other developed space countries like China or Russia. I just want to share with them that these tools are available to help their citizens. And then having that long presence. Yes, I went in for the conference, I visited schools, but now I've been involved with people in Togo now 8 months. So it's building that long-term relationship. It's connecting with people on LinkedIn and promoting their activities and partnering. So it's about building the relationship, as you said. We're building relationships, we're maintaining those relationships. And that's actually part of chapter 9 in the second book, building and maintaining relationships. Networks can help you find new jobs, find new training programs, find scholarships, find opportunities. So I always tell people, follow me on LinkedIn. I always try to promote things that are out there. Like, obviously, I'll promote this webinar, but there are programs like Opportunity for Youth is one of those organizations that promotes a lot of activities on LinkedIn, scholarships, internships, job opportunities. So, you know, you want to start building relationships. Another great organization is Women Tech Network. Even though it says women, it's for men and women. They have mentoring programs. So I've met both men and women proteges through the Women Tech Network that I've mentored. And several of them are also in both book 1 and 2. There's also like the Mars Society, their Space Generation Advisory Council. So there's a lot of organizations that might already be out there that have a global presence that you can connect with virtually. The G100 is another one for women entrepreneurs who are trying to sell their products in a global market. And so by networking into those organizations, you can build some relationships, you can find mentors, you might be able to find some free training. So that's why mentorship and or building those networks is so important, because it helps you to find access points. The other thing I really like about International Space University is they do have a very good alumni association. So people who go through their program, they're very powerful alumni that also keep in touch and help people find jobs, grants, so they can get their master's or PhD. So finding those universities or training programs that also have alumni services can be really beneficial. I just took some programs through Syracuse University, the Institute for Veterans and Military Family. I'm a veteran out of the military, so I took both a boot camp and an accelerator program for entrepreneurs. And because I did those programs, I'm now part of their alumni services. And their alumni services, they have an event today. After our call, they're having a speed networking session. So now I can speed network virtually. Maybe I find somebody else who's an author or a speaker or a strategist, and we connect and we build relationships. So by building those networks and then maintaining the relationship over time, it's not just once. It's once and then building the relationship. And it's not only what you get, it's about what you can give. And I have to tell you, every time I've mentored, I have learned way more than what I've given.
Talking about podcasts like The Diary of the CEO and The School of Greatness. And when I think about them, and I think about, for example, Jay Shetty and many others, I notice how many times they promote each other, they talk to each other. And this is one of the examples. Of course, there are many other examples that you were just mentioning. I see so many leaders and people who inspire me. I see them having this mindset. And where I was raised, let's say, most of the times, it was more about competition. So coming from Damascus, coming from Syria, the way I know that my parents, and I'm talking about the culture, that they are proud of me when they go and tell other parents, he's the first in his class, right? So it's all about like being first. But when in life, the most successful people, in my view, are the ones who collaborate with each other and they grow together. So that's something that I really appreciate and like also that how much you emphasize on it and also you live it, and it creates so many opportunities.
Well, my parents are similar to yours. They're very proud of the things I've accomplished, and that's wonderful. Parents should be proud of their children. And I think it's good to be first. But at the end of the day, nobody says, were you first in your class in your master's program? No. Were you first in your class in your PhD? No, they just call you doctor. So it's good to have the competitive spirit with yourself. How are you improving yourself every day? You're in competition with yourself. Hopefully each day you're getting better. You're learning something new. You're improving your skill set. And I kind of think of competition in the business arena kind of like sports. When you step onto the soccer field, we're competing. You're on the other team. I want to score a goal. You want to score a goal. But when we come off the field, now let's go have lunch together. How do we work together? That was a good game. Tell me how you learned how to do that. So it's good to have competition. I used to play tennis, and they said you would rise to the level of tennis player you would play. So you always wanted to play somebody better than you because it would force you to get better. You might always lose, but you're getting better. So it's good to have that competition that helps you get better. But then it's also good to remember that when we're done in the competition, whether it's competing for a government contract or competing for customers, that when we can still meet up, we can still go to lunch together, we can still find ways to partner and be friends and move things forward. And you see that in the space industry. Companies congratulate each other. SpaceX congratulates Blue Origin. You know, there is still that collaboration among space companies, with the government, with each other. So really looking at how we want to continue to compete, but we want to compete with rules that the government sets. We want a level playing field, that everyone has the same opportunity to compete in business. We want the same rules on the soccer playing field. That's why there are refs. And then when we're done and the competition is over, we want to be able to go back and say, what were some best practices? What were some lessons learned? Let's go to the International Astronautical Congress and let's do a talk about here are 10 lessons that we learned from competing for government contracts and share those best practices. And that's why you see a lot of the space industry, as well as other industries. I'm a program manager, so I'm part of Project Management Institute. So you can see individuals coming from industry sharing best practices, lessons learned. That's how we help the whole industry grow and become better, is by sharing those best practices.
When you have this rich experience of collaborating and working with people all around the world, what are your top 1, 2, 3 things that you learned and maybe changed you the most, learning about different cultures and living with people and working with people around the world?
Oh, that's always a good one. Well, the first one is words have different meanings. So even though I speak English and people in the United Kingdom speak English, our words may not mean the same thing. So it's really important. And then when you add a different language, so it's really important when you're meeting with other people that you understand what their meaning of what they're saying is. So in some cultures, they have a different, and then they have a different way of interacting as well. You know, the United States, we meet you, let's get down to business. Other cultures have a very different, it's about meeting you, it's about greeting you, it's about getting you a cup of tea, it's about talking to you about your family. And then after we talk and build the relationship, then we can talk about business. So, understanding what everybody's really saying, whether it's language or different meaning for words, understanding how different cultures approach business. And then I'd say the third one is never giving up. You know, sometimes people think, the first time I talk to somebody, and this is even in the US, the first time I talk to somebody, if I don't get the deal, then it's done. And that's not how it works. It's about building that relationship. It's about having the relationship and building trust. Many times the first time you meet somebody, unless it's a crisis like COVID, we need a COVID shot. You got one? I'm going to buy it. Most times though, business takes time to build the relationship, to build trust. And so you have to remember that you have to keep coming back. And a prime example for me is I'm finally going to capture a wonderful interview for an amazing alderman in the UK. And I met her last year in December. We were on a panel together. And for the last year, I have been trying to capture her for the next book that's coming out, Out of This World Leadership. I didn't give up. I would just every month send a gentle note. Do you have time for the interview? So finally, we have scheduled the interview for December, so she will be in the next book. So you also have to not give up that the relationship takes time. You don't want to be annoying like every day. Are you free? Are you free? Are you free? But, you know, realizing that you just need to follow up with people. Maybe it's quarterly, maybe it's monthly, you know, you figure that out, but you have to understand that the relationship, that people are busy and that if what you're doing is a good product or a good activity or writing good books, they will figure out eventually how to have the time if they want to be in there. So those are kind of three things that I've learned.
And it's part of my journey. It's part of my story now, even reaching this podcast and being able to talk to now over 25 experts in fields that I'm really interested and inspired to have these people role models. For me, they're like even like having some of like people that I've been contacting. It was for me, just talking to them or having conversation with them was something. Now I talk to them casually, we talk about days, we are friends, and that didn't happen overnight. I got lots of rejections. I wrote so many people and they said no. Some of them said, come back later, it happened later, but it's also part of the process, I think, yes.
It is. And it's and now, similar with the books, I also created a webinar series with the people that are in the book. So if you go to Shelley Brunswick YouTube, you know, not everybody could buy the book maybe, but I made the free webinar so you can at least hear the insights on YouTube. And I'll eventually create a short masterclass on YouTube about the book as well. But now you do the webinar, and then I help to promote them. One of the individuals, Dr. Catherine Nakalibi, who is the NASA Harvest Director for Africa, she helps farmers understand how they can use space technology to have better outcomes with being farmers, whether it's planting or not planting or understanding what's happening to their crops. And she came out with a TEDx, and she said, oh, when you get a chance, would you promote this? Well, absolutely. So what I did is I promoted her from being in the book. I shared her TEDx as well as our interview that we did for the book. So a couple resources for people. And then if people are more interested, then here's where you can buy the book. So it's about building the relationship to help each other. And ultimately, she's helping all these farmers, not just in Africa, but around the world with space technology. So I really want to help her promote that information. So you build these relationships where maybe you don't talk all the time, but you comment on LinkedIn or somebody comes out and says, hey, I've got this TEDx. Would you mind sharing it? And it's a wonderful TEDx. So those of you who want to see it, Dr. Catherine Nakalibi, a professor from the University of Maryland and the NASA Harvest Director for Africa. She has a great TEDx out about space technology helping farmers. And that's the other thing, promoting other people.
Yeah.
Helping to elevate other people's voices. And that's what you're doing. Thank you again for inviting me to join you. You're helping to promote not only my voice, but now I'm going to help promote Dr. John Wensven from ISU and Dr. Catherine Nakalibi from University of Maryland. And there's many others in the book, both in the U.S., not in the U.S., in space, not in space. So lots of great voices in the book that I want to help elevate.
And that's the ripple effect you were talking about, Shelley.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm curious also to hear from you. What are you excited about the most when we talk about the future of work and AI?
So right now there is a lot of fear about the future of work and AI. We're seeing in the U.S. some jobs going away. They're seeing how AI can be incorporated. And I have to admit, I have incorporated AI into some of my activities. Grammarly is a great checker for your books, for articles. You know, AI is a tool that can help you check this email. You know, do I have any misspelled words? Help me do this research real quick. So AI is eliminating some jobs. But what I'm also going to say is AI is going to be a big enabler in every industry, in education and entrepreneurship. And it is going to require some reskilling and upskilling. And that requires the role of government and industry and academia to really come together to work together. Because what does that reskilling and upskilling look like? Do we require more degrees? Maybe, maybe not. Does it require credentialing? And that's what I hear a lot of universities talking about now. It's less about getting a degree, and it's more about getting different credentialing. And then really working with industry to say, what do the new jobs look like? What are the skills you want people to have that relate to AI and quantum technology? And then it's universities listening, and then government maybe supporting those educational programs with the support of industry to make sure we're helping to reskill and upskill employees and people in our countries so that they're not unemployed. That's one of the biggest fears, is people are afraid they're going to lose their job and then they're not going to be able to find another job. So that's the vision with the future of work, is we need government's leadership, we need industry and academia to come together and to kind of help create that new pipeline of what reskilling and upskilling will look like for both artificial intelligence as well as other emerging technology.
Shelley, I think there's a connection between how we started and now we're talking about now, because we started with self-leadership, right? And talking about myself, I used to be afraid of AI. And I didn't want, I was thinking, yeah, it cannot take my job, for example, it cannot have work, etc. But over time, I even made a career shift because of all these changes. And I think it's even more liberating, because then I don't have to be dependent on something or do kind of work that it's sometimes percentage of it tedious, and it's, you know, more about administrative stuff. Then I can let AI do this, and I know that I can do more creative stuff that AI cannot do. And the more I talk and ask such questions to my guests, the more I get this confirmation.
I completely agree. And again, I use AI. I can ask AI write an article for me, but it'll be gibberish, right? Because AI is very fast and it can pull stuff. But if you don't know the right prompts to ask, so a lot of times I'll say, I'm doing research like on this. And I say, and I give it the links and the examples, help me find the similarities and the differences. It can do that. I could do that. It would just take hours of time. It can do that in moments. Those type of activities. So it's creating a workforce that's going to be way more efficient. It's going to eliminate that tedious work. And of course, it doesn't eliminate humans, because we still have to check AI's work. They call it a hallucinating, but sometimes AI isn't right. And yeah. So it requires you to validate. I mean, I always ask AI, where did you get this information? Show me the reference and the resource. I click on it and it goes nowhere. This reference does not work. AI, where did you find this information? Oh, I didn't exactly find it, right? So it's going to require humans to also validate the work of AI to make sure that it's not, they say hallucinating, lying. I had somebody describe AI as a excited grad student who constantly wants to tell their professor, yes, we can do that.
Yeah.
And so AI wants to say, yes, we can do that. And then when you go, are you sure? And then it's like, well, maybe not. So AI is very excited to help you accomplish your goals, but it may give you information that it thinks you want to hear, but it may not be accurate.
It's important to be aware of the confirmation bias. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. So, and some tools are better than others. And sometimes you can use multiple tools and create that. And then some people have created bots and many other things. So I think AI, especially for small and medium-sized companies, you know, they call it small and medium-sized enterprises, using AI and being able to utilize it effectively with a team that is AI savvy. I mean, they don't have to be AI people, but they've learned enough skills and they're credentialed, they could come and work for a small and medium-sized company and really help a small and medium-sized company exponentially grow, because they're able to capture and harness the tools of AI to help them grow quickly and nimbly.
There's another question also talking about the future. From your view, from your experience, what are the top three skills every leader and change maker must have in the next decade?
Excellent. There's a number of organizations who have put out a skill set, from the World Economic Forum to some thought leaders like Deloitte and others. But I'm going to say the soft skills are extremely important. Those are the skills that are uniquely human. And those are the skills that relate to communication. How do we communicate? Even with AI, I just shared with you, we have to communicate with AI. We have to ask it the right prompts. So communication is critical. Those leadership skills. You know, AI is not going to be a leader out there leading people. It's going to give advice, but ultimately we still need to develop amazing human leadership skills. And then we really need to look at resilience. You know, because change is happening, jobs are going to be created and go away. You talked about even companies that may be resistant to change. We really need to look at being resilient because we're going to have ups and downs. You know, sometimes you see on LinkedIn, everybody's like, I got this, I got this, I got this. It's always up, you know, wonderful story up and to the right. I call it a project management term. Up and to the right is a good trend. But most careers are like this. You know, and if you're on the entrepreneurial journey, one day you're like this and one day you're like this. So it's very diverse. So building that resilience mindset and remembering that, you know, every day is just another day and you get to keep moving forward. And some days you're going to make great strides. Some days you might go back a little bit. Other days you may go forward. It's about being resilient and just keep moving forward because it's also good to document those things. Maybe you have a vision wall or a notebook or something so that when you look back over the last month or week or however, you can say, wow, I did accomplish great things. So sometimes having an accountability person is helpful for that, like having a mentor. I have an executive mentor. And before I meet with him every month, I actually step back and say, what have I done since our last meeting? And I do ask ChatGPT, hey, what have I done since our last meeting? You know, and he comes up with some ideas that I might have missed. And then I put together a synopsis for my mentor saying, since we last met, here are the things I've accomplished related to being an author, being a speaker, being a strategist. Here are some other activities. Here is what I'd like to talk about when we meet. So that way I know what I want to talk about when I meet with him, and he knows what I want to talk about. So we come into that hour session. I don't have to spend the first 30 minutes telling him what I did over the last month. He already knows. And now it's what can we talk about today for my hour so that I know what I can do for the next month.
There is something inspiring you just mentioned now for me. And it reminds me of there is no person on earth, or first of all, knows everything or cannot have, you know, doesn't need help from others or doesn't have blind spots. Let's say we talk about the best or the most famous footballers, say Ronaldo or Messi. They have coaches. They had great coaches and they still getting coached every day. And if you talk about anyone in any field, and it's actually the other way around, because I used to think that maybe someone, if they are already like, you know, famous author and speaker and everything, then they only coach others. They don't need to be coached. But that's a great reminder. I'm curious, how often do you meet with your mentor?
I meet with him monthly. And and usually when I mentor proteges, I meet with them monthly. But of course, if something comes in that might be urgent and I want his feedback, or if somebody I'm mentoring has something urgent, you're always able to email or WhatsApp. So monthly plan, but then you know, opportunities might pop up where I need his insights of what does he think about this? So everybody, no matter where you are in your career, you should have a mentor or executive coach, somebody. And my mentor I requested, I don't know everything either. The person I'm working with right now was a marketing leader. So he really understands marketing, sales, executive presence. And so those are skills, you know, coming out of the military and being a chief operating officer and now a CEO. It's not an area I really had a lot of experience as a marketing executive. So he comes in from things from a different perspective as I'm looking to grow my book series, my speaker series, and so on. So he comes in from a very different perspective than what I've learned through the military and being at Space Foundation.
And one last thing I want to check, because this is a key word and I've been studying, reflecting on it. It's also a part of my MBA, which is being resilient. Like how can you be resilient? So there are two things that you mentioned and I want to check that this is what I understand correctly. The first one is document and say it in a short. And the second one is having a mentor. Do you like to add anything else? How can you be resilient and stay resilient?
The other thing I want to say is some days, you know, some days are going to be like, oh my gosh, I wrote a whole chapter today for my next book. And you're like, oh, and then the next day you have writer's block. So it's okay to have those days. Sometimes we're really hard on ourselves. We're like, why didn't I write five chapters this week? Well, five chapters in a week is probably a bit ambitious. So sometimes we're really hard on ourselves. We set really high goals. It's part of that SWOT analysis. So we also have to remember that as long as we're moving forward, it's okay. So maybe today I didn't write a chapter in the book, but maybe I interviewed somebody, or maybe I scheduled an interview with somebody for the book. So you know, small steps are okay. Every day is not going to be a giant leap for mankind. Let's remember, John, President Kennedy said, we choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. It took 10 years for the United States to land a man on the moon and safely return him to Earth. There were lots of setbacks, but ultimately it happened. So I say that to your listeners. There are usually no overnight successes. It's built on tenacity, not giving up, every day, coming back and doing it again until you get there. And so be patient and be kind to yourself, and also, you know, balance yourself. Make sure you're spending time with your family, you're recharging, doing things that are good for you mentally and physically, because if you burn yourself out, it won't be good for anyone. So remember that you have to take breaks. And so I'm going to take a break as well, and go on vacation in December with my family and have a little break. I'm sure there'll still be some work done, but it won't be like being at work every day.
So give space to yourself.
Exactly.
And also, it's like a bit of a summary of some what you were saying is from the beginning about being visionary is to be clear on your vision. You know what where you are heading to. You don't have to choose everything, because in the age of internet, there are so many things that you can think of, and there are so many ideas. So be clear where you want to go. And then sometimes you might go, like, you take many steps, let's say, towards your goal. And maybe other days you just take one step, and that's okay.
And that is okay. I will say I'm in another program for the NASDAQ Entrepreneur Center. So it's a great organization for your listeners. They have a wonderful podcast series, but I've been accepted into their milestone circle. And so we have to set a goal for the next 12 weeks. Well, my goal was to create this International Space University curriculum, you know, and then how does that tie into the brand? Initially, I didn't plan to write a series of books. I planned to write a book. And then I realized, oh my gosh, I need to write a series of books. So you can start with one plan, one milestone, and then that might lead to the next milestone that leads to the next milestone. But the important thing is it ties back to your SWOT analysis, to your vision. Where do you want to go? And the biggest thing, why? Why do you want to do that? And like for me, you know, I shared the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is I want to pay it forward. I want to create these pathways. I want to share this information with others so they can find their way, whether it's in the space industry or entrepreneurship or another industry, that they're able to find their pathway. And the best way to do that is write it down and get out there and talk about it.
Shelley, I think it's really the right time for me that we had this podcast, because I'm being honest now. Every day I start my day with the journaling, and I end my journaling with usually three things. I don't, like, if it's so much, I put five, but I try to concentrate on three things for the day. And yeah, yesterday and today, I feel like I couldn't really do what I was planning to do. And it was what you were saying, hard on myself. And then now coming here, say, okay, but it doesn't matter. I mean, I still have today, I still have tomorrow. And the most important thing is that I'm clear on why I'm doing this, right?
Why are you doing it? And does it relate to your why? So there's a great TEDx out there from Simon Sinek, and it's like, start with the why. So I share with your audience, you can Google that. What is your why? Once you, and that's all part of that self-leadership from the book, the first chapter. Once you understand your why, then you're able to figure out how and what you can do to accomplish it. And the how and the what might change, but the why should not change.
My previous guest, Sven Heidenreich, his question is, how do we shape a future that is good for all children?
That's an excellent question. And I share with you, that's really one of those foundational things that every country and almost every citizen on planet Earth wants to shape a future for their children that's better than their lives. And how do we do that? Through educational programs, through creating access programs. Again, similar to the book I wrote, how do we create those access, awareness, and action steps so our children have those things? And there's a lot of ways to do that, even with AI, building that online. That is another great thing. We have telecommunication, so we can have teleeducation. We're also going to have AI can also help us with education so that we can provide education around the world so that no child is left behind, or even the digital divide. Because my question will be for your next business leader, how do we make sure we close the digital divide? Because right now we can see there are island nations around the world that don't even have access to the internet because you can't lay fiber optic cable there. There are space companies that are trying to provide internet access, but until we can close the digital divide, we will have people who have access to prosperity, to education, to opportunity, and then we're going to have a lack of that for individuals. So for your next guest, I look forward to hearing how they think we can close that digital divide, whether it's in their country or even globally.
Okay, we'll do this. Shelley, do you think there's anything that is important that we haven't talked about? Talking about your books, your experience, all the things we talked about, also about the future, AI, leadership.
We've done a lot. So how about we say, you know, for your audience, if you're interested, I'm on LinkedIn. You can follow me. I post a lot of great information. Like Omar, I'm going to post his podcast. I post other podcasts, articles. So there'll be great opportunity. The other thing is, if you're going to want to meet in person, I plan to be at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, 3 to 9. January 2026. I also plan to be at the International Astronautical Congress in October in Turkey. So I hope to see you there. As well as I shared, I look forward to, if you're going to join the International Space University, ISU Space Studies Program 26, that will be in Strasbourg, France in the summer of 26. Hopefully I'll maybe meet you there. So my goal is hopefully we'll get to connect, but if not, I look forward to joining you on LinkedIn, and we'll keep the conversation going, because the only way we can accomplish great things is to work together.
How do you celebrate usually your achievements?
So how do you celebrate? Sometimes you just start the next project right away, but you do take a step back. Maybe it's going out to lunch, sharing with your family. You know, when the book came out and was launched, it was like, wow, we've got two books out now. Who would have ever thought I could have written one book, right? Now we have two. Now we're talking about three. So I think doing nice things, you know, is it going out to lunch with your family and celebrating with them? Because remember, nobody accomplishes these great things alone. You have supporters. Maybe it's your family, your friends, your mentors. So how do you share that accomplishment with all the people who've also been on the journey? Maybe it's sharing a social media post saying, I want to thank all the mentors who've helped me accomplish these great things. Nobody goes to space alone. Nobody accomplishes great things alone. So the gratitude I shared with you, being the leader for the next book, is going to be about inspirational, authentic, and having gratitude. So I think the best way that I celebrate those accomplishments is really being grateful. Grateful that I have the opportunity to do something I'm really passionate about. Grateful that I have a supportive family and mentors and friends. Grateful that I'm able to do these things that can help others. So I think the gratitude is one of the most important things that keeps me grounded, and remembering that this isn't about me. It's about helping others.
I'm really grateful for having this conversation with you, Shelley.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. I'm grateful that you reach out and ask me to join you. And I watched some of your other interviews. So thank you for having this wonderful podcast, for creating awareness. And I look forward to continuing the journey with you and your audience.
Me too. I'm looking forward to staying in contact and see what we can co-create also in the future.
That sounds wonderful.
Thank you very much, Shelley.
Well, until next time, I look forward to seeing you around the galaxy.
Congratulations for listening until the end. You are in the top 25% of listeners. Studies show that we forget up to 70% of what we hear within 24 hours. But when we repeat an insight by sharing it with someone, commenting, or journaling it, it moves into long-term memory. So now tell me, what are your 1, 2, 3 takeaways you're keeping from this conversation? Enjoy every moment. Until next time.